Well, hello, and welcome to Stirring the Pot with Linda Nygaard and Tom Conway. It's been such a long time. Oh my goodness, it's been a long time since we've been in the studio. I don't really know what to do. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Linda. It's Linda, right?
My name's Linda. Linda, yeah. Yes. Did I not say that?
No. I said I was just trying to remember who you were. I live alone, and I've been alone.
Me too.
And I need some help.
So we'll have to share some stories about that.
Okay.
We also have the ever elegant and enlightening Susan McCabe at the engineer board today.
She's awesome.
Happy to be here with hag hair.
Excuse me, lustrous hag hair. Thank you very much.
It is quite lustrous. It's lovely.
And unlike a lot of us on the island, you use conditioner, so I'm that's something right there.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
That extra lard.
Yeah, it is. Well, we've, it's been months and months since we've been here in the studio together. And
Crazy. There's
a couple little announcements I'd like to make. One is that Stirring the Pot now, instead of once a week, is going to be once a month. To start with, because we think that's all we can do right now. And then Tom's going to be here every month with me, provided I don't misbehave.
Darn tootin', sister.
And the show is now an hour instead of 30 minutes. So, you know, you'll want to have maybe a couple cups of coffee or a couple glasses of wine with us.
Now, do you think across Vashon that we heard there were shouts of glee, or were there Uggs?
Oh, probably. Well, either way, you know, probably some people just shut it off right now.
Oh, my God. Mildred, turn on the TiVo, honey.
Mildred. We've been talking about Mildred and Myrtle this morning.
You know, we like those names.
Yeah. Well, so how have you been? How did you survive COVID? How's it been?
It is really amazing to me that there have been so many little epiphanies each day. Not that I appreciate half of them, but I'm trying
to take notice.
But as we were mentioning earlier before we went on the air, I said, you know, most of my friends would laugh at this, but I never realized I was that social.
When you said that, I just had to laugh, because I have to tell you the truth. Some of your other friends and I have been talking about that very thing, that Tom is very surprised that he's so social.
I had no idea. Like, you know, when I go to the store, I realize I probably talk to 42 people.
And now you don't.
And now I don't.
No, it's in and out.
And even Buddy, my bulldog.
Yeah.
You know, he just looks at me blankly and lets me talk to him most of the day.
Lets you do what you do.
Exactly.
Which is whatever. I don't know. I did okay. I think I had a few disasters in the kitchen and a few, you know, I stayed home.
Did you find that, what's so remarkable about isolation?
I mean, I'm still staying home.
Yeah. Did you find, though, like, you know, I finally get it, like all the gangster movies I watched my whole life, that when we're going to put them in solitary confinement. Now I finally get it. That's not pleasant.
No. And, you know, I actually thought about that, because I thought, you know, some people are in prison. And they're in a, you know, 6x8 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So let's think about that. And then I don't feel quite so sorry for myself in my little apartment, but it became real home to me when I was there this extended period of time.
Yeah.
Because I don't usually spend that much time at home.
Mm-hmm. Did you find you would create a routine, or did you?
No.
It was amorphous.
I really tried. You know, so many people in the world say, okay, you have to get up and you have to do this and this and this and make sure that you have the routine and, you know, and I don't know. I'd say, okay, so tomorrow I'm going to, and then it became the next day.
I know. That's the crazy part of
it. It's like the
it.
Day bled into the next day to the next day. I got a lot more done when I was really busy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a curious commonality that I was starting like FaceTime support groups, like, hi, I'm Tom and I didn't do anything. Or somebody would tell you what they did and they would be sort of showing off, and you know they didn't do half of it. And they go, what did you do? And I go, well, I fed Buddy and I flushed the toilet.
that was really good that you did that.
Pretty much there.
I know,
And that was, you know, all after 2 o'clock.
Well, it has been interesting. I'm still not ready to have anybody in my home yet.
No.
I would like to. You know what I really miss, though, most of all? Mm-mm. I think. I mean, I miss the hugs and I miss the touch and I miss the way we are when we actually have eye contact as opposed to FaceTime or Zoom.
Yeah.
I miss the sounds of the people, the sounds of the laughing. I miss the sounds of the clinking of the dishes or the teacup or the just that sort of background ambiance of being around our friends and being with them. Of course, I miss the hugs.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, even like when if you go get coffee or something,
right,
and you're standing 6 feet apart,
right,
you miss the mm-hmm. fact that before it was like this little beehive of activity,
and everyone was touching, uh-huh. and everyone was laughing, big wide open mouth, spewing spores all over the place.
Exactly. You know, it is one thing. I was watching some show, and it made me. I realized that I've kind of become. COVID has become sort of my default reaction to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you're watching something and I'm yelling at the TV going, get back,
wait,
get back. You know, he's leaning over the diner table, taking the dishes. And I'm going like, no, that's not
too
safe.
Close.
Too slight. Put a mask on. Come on.
Well, I've been very, very, very careful. We are living in auspicious times. And in this time of history in our country, I feel like, you know, on Voice of Ashland, we like to keep our shows sort of current all the mm-hmm. time without naming the date or mm-hmm. so that we can replay them in 6 months or something. But right now I kind of feel like it's important to note the mm-hmm. date, as
absolutely.
In June 2nd, 2020, and our country is in big, big trouble. What I find with our community, though, is the opposite.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I have seen so much good and kindness and sort of ease of being on Vashon Island, and I consider that such a blessing.
That's a lovely way to put it.
And I might kind of cry a little bit, mm-hmm. but we're very lucky to live here.
Yeah, I think that's something where I'll be sitting on my front porch, and you know, at first I'll be looking at weeds that need to be pulled, and then I'll go and then I'll go like, oh, but I have weeds, and I've got a beautiful view, and I have people that are kind in my community and very caring. I mean, it's something that. If it doesn't warm your heart, then you need a transplant because
you aren't awake.
You aren't awake.
Yeah. What's that? Oh.
who's that at the door?
Oh, some old time radio. That's just great.
That was the best. We have a professional here today.
We do. Well, I think we're in store for some treats.
What?
You can do that anytime you want to.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing we need to talk about, of course, is food and how we did all that and what we're doing with regard to that. But we have everything we want here on this island.
Mm-hmm.
And go to the farm stands.
Yeah.
And we talked the other day when we met about how easy it is now to go get some takeout from, you know, our local favorite little shops. Mm-hmm. Everybody's there working hard. It's been important to me, I know, to try to help support them. It gets, you know, I mean, we don't go out to eat anymore. So getting a to-go, I had to-go the other day from the Ruby Brink, and I thought I was just going to die. It was so good. It just felt so good to have food that somebody else cooked.
Yeah.
And that was as delicious as it was, you know. And Tom, you were going to talk a little bit about some of your favorite food stands or the farm stands and the Vashon Fresh connection.
Oh, yeah. I was telling Linda that... I think one of the things that have that sort of become more common or more of a normal pulse this time around, with everyone being so isolated, is people seeking out you know, healthy food or mm-hmm. or local food,
mm-hmm.
and it's really delightful to see all the farm stands that are popping up, as well as the established ones that are
right.
expanding or are offering more, or even, you know, I saw on Facebook where Pacific Crest was saying it's the first time they ever sold out of tomato plants.
Wow.
You know?
And so, good for her.
So people are
people are
supporting, and people are really supporting the food. Like this week, if you're not familiar with it, it's just great. Vega. So if you want to know where the farm stands are, probably easiest, one of the easiest ways to do it is just go to vegavashon.org and /farmstand-map.
They actually have a map. I haven't looked
at it.
They do. I have a little routine, you know, but I'd like uh-huh. to go out and look at some others that I haven't seen yet.
It's kind of fun to make, and that's something I've been doing too, being so isolated and rummy, is
yeah.
I'll go check out a farm stand,
mm-hmm.
one I know and one I don't know, and I'll do it every once
Good.
In a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have some rhubarb already in my fridge from Green Man Farm.
Yum.
for the first official Vachon rhubarb pie. I made a couple, but they weren't Vachon rhubarb.
Oh well, this will be special. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah. So it's really pretty amazing if you really think about it. Mm-hmm. You get out of your house. You go drive to a farm stand, you see what they have to offer. Usually they have a presence on Facebook. They'll tell you they're at the farm stand,
right,
and you can look on. Or they'll have an Instagram page, or they'll have a website.
Or you can get it delivered.
With Vachon Fresh.
With Vachon Fresh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's part of VEGA, the Vachon Island Growers Association, under their umbrella. And basically they have two markets on Wednesday and on Saturday. And what's really great is it's so cool. I mean, you can go on the website, vachonfresh.com, and go to the marketplace, and you can see everything that's being offered. And it's basically like a catalog. And you go, oh, good, I want two bunches of arugula, and I want a wild greens.
And there's lots of cheese, and there's flowers.
There are great cheeses now. You know, there's Venison Valley has some great stuff. Burton Hill's really good. Some great goat cheeses. Kurt Timmermeister, which is great, because he hasn't been represented in that venue for a while.
I haven't even heard his name for a while.
Yeah, well, probably too, because I think probably his markets are struggling right now with restaurants. Yeah. So it gives him another opportunity to sell his cheeses. So the cheeses, there are spices. Then there are crafters are selling on there.
Yeah.
So then you can either have it delivered for a fee or picked up at the Vachon Farmers Market space, either Wednesday or Saturday.
Excellent. And that's part of what Vachon brings to the table, no pun intended.
Yeah.
But I want to address...
You know, we're such
all the time.
We're like 4-year-olds, and so we're going like, oh my God, she made clapping sounds. That's so cool.
That's so cool.
Your machine can do that. Yeah.
I want to address this gardening thing that everybody's doing.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I'm not a gardener.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have a garden. I have my little apartment, and I have windowsills and things. Well, one day during a particularly horrible day of isolation, I was cleaning out my pantry, and there were the little potatoes that had, you know, a few too many little sprouts on them.
Yeah.
And I thought, gosh, I remember a time when these just would have been planted. So I'm going to plant one.
Where?
I got out a bowl that I don't like anymore.
Uh-huh.
And I managed, it was tricky, but I managed to poke a hole in the bottom of it without breaking it.
You really didn't like that bowl.
No. And then I put dirt in it, and then I put the potato in there. And then I saw I had a little bit of garlic that had a little sprout on it, so I put that in there too. And now I have like a 7-inch high potato.
Wow.
In my windowsill. And I'm kind of attached to it. I don't know what to do with it now because it's not going to make potatoes in there.
No, but you know what you do now?
What?
It needs a playmate. It needs a sweet potato because do you remember
when you were a kid? The leaves will entwine.
Yeah.
Right?
So you used to cut a sweet potato in half and you'd stick toothpicks in it like an avocado seed.
I haven't done that.
Put it in a jar of water.
Like third grade. That's third grade gardening. That's what I can do.
Exactly.
That's what I can do. I think I'm going to bring the potato over to your house.
Okay.
And we'll transplant it somewhere.
Uh-huh. Like the worm bin?
Yeah, the worm bin. Great.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I used to do the thing with the avocados and the and the toothpicks when my kids were little, and they'd grow these beautiful plants. And my son asked me just a little while ago, did those ever grow avocados? Well, no, but they looked good.
But they're pretty.
They were pretty.
They're really pretty.
Yeah. He was thinking about doing it at his house in Los Angeles.
What? Yeah.
But well, I think in Los Angeles it would.
You might actually get avocados.
You might get avocados, but you should get a pretty plant.
I get them in my I get them in my worm bin. You know, I throw all my like scraps that the chickens don't want, which would be avocado peels and pits. And after winter, I open it up, and they were all there's like a little forest of avocado starts in there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Must be warm enough due
it's
to
warm
the
enough
decomposition.
In there. Yeah. Well, let's talk for a second about kitchens.
Yeah.
And what we discovered, did you discover anything new about yourself during isolation with regard to your kitchen and food and all of that?
Yes. I don't know that I discovered it, that I'm basically a slob at heart.
But, the dishes can wait.
Oh my God. I don't know what my problem was. I'd look in the mirror and I'd go, do I have a brain tumor? Because I would go, why can't you put a dish in the dishwasher? When you have Tom and Tom would have conversations about this. I go, it's not that hard. Yeah, well, I could do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Shut up. Okay. Well. You know, so, but I learned that I could, my kitchen could be the size of an aircraft carrier runway, and I would find every inch of that surface to put something on.
Covered. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I'm that way too.
And then I would do it like, then what I did is I got cake plates and I started putting stuff up sort of like Jetson's houses,
oh,
you know, like
yeah,
on stilts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. It's, well, it was creative anyway.
It was.
Did you discover anything new about how you felt about the food you were cooking, or what happened when you ran out of something and you couldn't go to the store? I mean, those kinds of things that we dealt with.
Yeah.
Or are dealing with, really.
I started kind of going through my freezer. Mm-hmm. Which one epiphany was, I don't like frozen food.
So, okay, well, that's
so
good to know.
I started thawing stuff out and cleaning out my freezer and giving it to the chickens. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't, you know, like once it goes in there, it's more of a storage of something I don't want.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of kooky how that happens.
That's kind of weird. I don't do that. I like to freeze some food and have it.
Mm, I like ice cream. That's what I like
frozen.
Well,
yeah, that's always good.
That's my frozen food.
You know, I did in the... I think I'm still doing it. I was going to say, in the very beginning, I became really conscious of how much of whatever it was I was using or chopping or stirring. Mm-hmm. And do I really need to use that much? Do I really need that particular spice? Can I use a different spice? I found, you know, I'm kind of brutal when it comes to onions. And I whack that end off and chop them up and then whack the other end off. And that end just goes.
Uh-huh.
Well, I started looking at them and I thought, you know, if I had two or three of these, it's a whole onion, really. I mean, it's a lot of wasted onion that mm-hmm. I'd been doing. So now I feel rather proud because I have little bags of onions in the fridge for next time.
You could also dye linen with the peels if you'd like.
Oh, God.
What? If you were really a true Vashonite, you would have made a linen smock with dyed onion skins.
And how do you know I didn't?
Oh, yeah, that's true. I'm sorry. That's
I mean, how do you know I didn't?
It's very presumptuous.
Yeah. But I did find really that I could be more creative with what I had than, oh gosh, I'm out of cilantro. I need to go to the store.
Yeah. Well, did you have any, like what I found is I had like ridiculous snacks, you know, yeah. It was sort of like a day of ridiculous snacking.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point I had Braunschweiger, which is an odd thing to have,
I love
but I have it. Because Buddy likes it in his bones.
Does he?
Yeah. Yeah. If I want him to.
Oh, what a good idea.
Yeah. Put a little in the bone and then he chews on it and cleans his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So I go through celery and Braunschweiger.
Well.
And then chocolate chips and peanuts were my dessert because I didn't, you know, I didn't have anything
else. Well, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Well, I did cottage cheese and salsa.
That does not sound good.
It is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, yep, it's good. It's an old craving I had when I was pregnant.
Oh. There you go.
That was a long time ago, but it's still really good. It's still
and
very
you have,
good.
And you have been isolating, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, just checking.
I have been isolating. Oh, my God.
Ba-dum, ba-dum, boom.
Yeah. Yeah, that. she's very clever.
She's the best.
I just wanted to say something. You know, we were talking earlier about the kindness of people on Vashon mm-hmm. and how we're all sort of taking care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
I was thrilled when Rock Island Pizza opened again.
Yes.
Because I could order a pizza and they do half-baked pizzas. And I love that idea because you just take it home and finish mm-hmm. it in your oven and then it's sizzling hot. It's so good. Well, I asked her, how do I do this, blah, blah, blah. And Maisie said, well, turn your oven up to, I think it's 500. I said, wow, that's really hot. And she said, yep. And then put it on your pizza stone and get the stone in there and get it all hot. I said, well, I don't have a pizza stone. I've never used one. I don't ever cook pizza at home. So she lent me her pizza stone.
No way.
Yeah. And I took it home and I put it in the oven and then I put the half-baked pizza on top of it. Oh my gosh, it was so good. It was like it just came out of their oven.
Nice.
So now I'm going to invest in a pizza stone in case I cook another pizza.
Someday. That's good to know.
But it really did help. It really worked. So I learned that, and that was a very kind thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, on the other side of the coin, people like Earthen. You know, Earthen is doing takeout now.
Yeah.
And you can get those fabulous pastries, and oh my goodness. And Megan and Adam at Snapdragon are open again for takeout, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. They're deathly sweets in there.
Yeah. And
there's some spinach, too, if you want it, but...
Yeah, and I like they're doing. It's an interesting concept they're doing. I mean, not interesting as much. Interesting and appropriate. Like as far as I think for them and for the community, mm-hmm. it's you can go in and you can get the baked goods, and then they also now have soup or something, soup or salad.
Yeah, so you can
it's a little if you want something savory that's available too. Yeah,
they also have takeout mimosas.
What?
And yeah, Ruby Brink is doing takeout cocktails.
Yeah, and takeout.
I hope that doesn't
change. What's the tomato thing?
Bloody Mary.
Thank you. Take out Bloody Marys.
Yum. Sounds good. Yeah. Well, yeah, we have to see. We have more exploring to do, even though we are in isolation. You know,
that's true.
What else do we want to talk about? Oh, I know. When I, in the very beginning, you know, when all this COVID thing was happening, and we were all scared to death. It was like, oh my God. It was very scary, and they talked about how to stock your pantry and what to do, and you need to shop so you don't have to go to the store except for 2 weeks or whatever. Well, I'm a pretty good stalker.
Ain't that the truth?
Not that kind.
Leave me alone.
Anyway, I emptied my pantry out. I cleaned it all out and got rid of the expired stuff, and then I restocked it, and it was just gorgeous. It gave me so much happiness because I looked at it and I thought, you know, there is definitely a connection to having enough food and feeling safe. Mm-hmm. And I think about the people right now who don't have enough. And I just want to encourage everybody in Vashon and in other places in the world, all of our fans in Switzerland and mm-hmm. Turkey.
Istanbul, yeah.
See? Donate to your food bank. Mm-hmm. Our food bank on Vashon's business customer base has increased 400%
wow.
in 2 months. Yeah. So they're very busy and they need some help. Mm-hmm. But on the other side of that coin, what I learned about myself is I stocked my pantry like it was 1930 and we were going into the Depression and it was all things that really had to be really cooked, like bags of flour and bags of sugar and, you know, the staples that really I didn't want afterwards because mm-hmm. I had so much. It was way too much. Cooking for me. I got so sick and tired of cooking for myself. I don't know what happened. I thought I was cooking for maybe I was cooking for the community. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's kind of like I am in the kitchen. You know, I was raised in a giant family and to cook for one person is really hard.
It is. And I think that is sort of since the show, you know, since we focus on cooking, it's sort of it's really delightful that the one thing that I did that we all noticed happened is people started cooking and baking. And like the fact that I had to go get flour in a parking lot,
yes.
you know, behind a business with my own Ziploc bag. And I was feeling like I was, you know, dealing cocaine and it was just mm-hmm. flour.
Well, I had some flour dropped off in a brown bag.
Man, you got a good dealer.
Yeah, I had to pay a little extra.
Yeah. But and so I found and then people were making bread and I thought, okay, I'm going to make bread. And mm-hmm. I tried different things. And I one of the things that will stay with me after this is I got a sourdough starter from my friend Kasana, who's mastering her own sourdough mm-hmm. baking skills. And she's mm-hmm. really gotten good. And so I thought, oh, well, I can do that. And then I did it and I realized that's not so much what I want to do because it was too hard.
Well, there's a lot you have to take care of it all the time.
You have to take care of it. But I did keep it because the one way I could keep the sourdough starter, because I do like to do yeast breads and it's mm-hmm. easier for me to do. I like, mm-hmm. that's just what I know. And, but I started making crackers out of the sourdough. And I tell you what, if you got a sourdough starter, look online for sourdough. King Arthur Flour has a really good one for crackers. It's crazy. And then if you really want to take it up a notch, mm-hmm. you know, you can roll it out like they used to call it Sardinian flatbreads.
Yeah.
Or just flatbreads, but you can put it through a pasta roller. If you make pasta and and it totally, you can thin it out to as thin as you want it. And, you know, it's hard not to eat them all within a 24-hour period. They're so good.
Yeah. And so then you just bake them and they come out nice and crisp?
Yeah, you do. You bake them, they come out really nice and crisp. And then you
are they salty? Do you salt them?
Yes. And then what's great is they can be whatever you want them mm-hmm. to be. Like you can put, I feel like Forrest Gump. You can put on sesame seed. You can put on poppy seed. You can put on your mustard seed.
Whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can. Yeah. Hey, simmer down, audience.
Yeah. They're coming in droves.
Oh, my God.
Did you have any disasters?
Oh, in the kitchen?
In the kitchen?
Yeah, I had, in fact, I have a pan that I was almost going to put it on Vashon All, but then I realized it was just too much information for my community to know about me. So now I'll tell you on a radio show. But I had a really beautiful pan that I paid for. You know, enough, quite a bit for a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And I make orange peels, candied orange peels.
Yeah.
And anytime I eat an orange, you know, I make right. sure I slice it in little slivers and then make a sugar water syrup. And I just keep doing that until I get enough and then I can it. And it's really good for baking or putting in drinks
and
or
garnishes,
iced tea or garnishes.
On top of a cake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But one of the things I also learned is I have to put a timer on. When I'm in the kitchen and something's going in the oven or on top of the stove, I don't care. I don't care if it's a baby bottle or what. It's a, you know, anything. I have to put a timer on. So I didn't put a timer on this, and I was upstairs doing something, and I smelled what smelled like burning sugar. And basically, the bottom of the pan looks like black glass. It's...
Oh!
And I can't get it out. No matter what, I've practically chiseled it out in it.
And so you were going to give it to somebody?
I was going to give it to somebody.
Well, that was nice of you.
Yeah, it's a nice little all-clad pan that
oh,
maybe somebody
Oh, that's
could,
too bad.
I know.
Yeah. Well, I had a little disaster. Sometimes I think there's a demon that lives in my kitchen and it invades me when I'm cooking. I don't know.
And it's not a cat.
No, it's not a cat. I got a hankering for chocolate cake. My mom used to make a really good chocolate cake, and I thought, I'm going to do this 9x13 pan, you know, nothing fancy like layers and fillings and all that. Just a sheet cake pan with homemade caramel frosting on it, which is just fabulous. So chocolate. And I had good chocolate. I had everything. And I made this beautiful batter. It was just gorgeous. And I just was just about ready to put it in the pan. And a little voice in my head said, oh, no, I wasn't ready to put it in the pan. I was doing the dry ingredients. And a little voice said, you know, I don't think that's enough salt. So I put more salt in it, just a little bit. And when I took it out of the oven and when I tried it in 20 minutes, it was vile. I don't know how a little bit of extra salt would do that, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I had to throw it away.
No,
it was bad. It wasn't even anything I could share.
I think that's just a rite of passage for any cook at any time in their life.
But why now? Because I would never do that. I don't. Yeah. I think it was my isolation devil, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it was. But yeah, I had a few disasters. I had a success, though. I made some grapefruit orange marmalade. And that was good.
Really? With the grapefruit in it, it was still good?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I like that you don't like grapefruit. Brat. Such a brat.
No, that sounds, delicious.
Oh, stop it. So tell me something else. What else is going on with you? We talked about how did we live in the isolation? I mean, we can be in the kitchen all day long if we want to, but there are other things that I think we discovered about ourselves or each other when we were alone. Like, what did you do that was different?
Oh, you know, you know, this is so odd because it's on the radio and then it's sort of like, I guess people will hear it, but
I guess they will.
But I noticed that my patterns were just so goofy and off. Like, all I'd have to do is I try to keep it at bay. Like somebody's whispering in my ear. Oh, you could take a nap.
Oh, and then you could take another
then
one.
Then I could take another nap and another. And it was just sort of like these quickie little naps all day. And it was just killing me that I succumbed to one too many naps, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I found that I listened to a lot of music.
Yeah, I did that
too. I listened to a lot of music. And one day I did, more than one day, I did myself a great service by just sitting there and listening, really listening to Rigoletto, just really listening. And then, you know, I discovered, the bluegrass fans out there are going to say, what? But I just discovered a bluegrass band I liked, and Coulter, I think, is their name. And they're very good. So I sort of expanded my music a little bit, and I found that that really helped.
How do you go about, like, when you want to, you know, like, I think there are times, definitely when I do that, where I want to find new music because, you know, my playlist is pretty much the last 30 years of my life. And how do you go about finding new music? Do you have a way you do it?
Well, I just have Spotify, and sometimes I just go on the web and I look up a composer, or I look up a type of music, or you know, YouTube, whatever. I don't really have any way of, you know, both my sons are musicians, so they always have good stuff.
They tell you what?
Kind of. Mm-hmm. And then I don't want to commit adultery here, but the radio station 91.3, which is the Bellevue station, plays really good music. They've got a very diverse...
It's eclectic?
Yeah, very. And they have Hawaiian music and African music, country music, and all kinds of... It's just really lovely. And there's a 1 to 4 in the afternoon is just a pile of different music.
Oh, nice. That
most of which you've never heard.
Yeah.
Which I like. I mean, it's, you know, it's a college station.
That is something that I found that recently, like with music, I've started watching YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And what I felt very nostalgic in for some reason. And, you know, Linda Ronstadt and I were a thing way back.
Were you?
Yeah, before Jerry Brown.
Oh.
And, and I just miss her so much. But anyway, I started listening to...
That's funny. She and I were a thing before Jerry Brown, too.
Man. You're no good. You're no good.
You're no good.
You're no good. So I started watching... What was so great about it is that's one of the better parts of the interwebs is when you start, you know, the proverbial rabbit hole where you start off, and I was listening to some of my favorite songs that were pretty uncommon for, you know, what most people know that she sang. And then you see underneath it and it goes, people who listen to this like this.
Oh yeah, that.
And then,
yeah.
And so then it would lead me to Linda Ronstadt and Dolly Parton with Emmylou Harris.
Emmylou.
And they had those two great albums. And so then I started listening to that. And then it would be from Emmylou Harris. It would go like
That's kind of how it goes.
Carla Barnoff. And you're going, Carla Barnoff?
For
you
young
whippers.
Barnoff.
Barnoff. Barnoff. I can't. What? Barnoff.
Barnoff.
Anyway. And so it was sort of, it's fun to discover people you knew and rediscover them. And then, of course, it would give you new artists. There was a really sweet little French group I like called Avalon Jazz Band.
Oh, I don't know them.
And that was my little vacation to Paris. You'd play them and you'd...
Oh, how fun.
You'd pretty much be in croissant somewhere.
All those crumbs dripping down on your blouse.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we need to take a little bit of break here. I want to say that you are listening to KVSH FM, Vashon Island, 101.9. You're listening to Stirring the Pot with Linda Nygaard and Tom Conway. I'm glad you're here. So, we're back. You know, one thing I thought about when I was cooking, and not cleaning, but cooking, that how did they do it in the Depression? And then I saw a book called A Square Meal. It's a culinary history of the Great Depression. And it's pretty dry reading, really. I mean... But there are some gems in here about what they did back in the day.
Oh, good. I was worried it was like one page. It goes, we had nothing.
Poor Mother Hubbard.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. Let's see. Where to start here?
I'm sorry. Because your parents were in the Depression, were they not? Or are they?
They would have been kids.
Yeah. My mom. Yeah. She was.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were. That's true. Yeah.
I think, my mom was born in 28, and my dad was born in 22.
Right now, how long the Depression actually lasted.
Look that up.
Going. Okay.
And then, this book goes through different areas of the country and what they were doing and how they did it. And so many people relied on what grew wild. And I know that people do here on Vashon, too. There's a lot of foraging that goes on and mushrooms and all the wonderful things that people find out in the woods.
And those nettle pickers.
Oh, those nettle pickers. I really admire them. I love nettles, but I'm not picking them.
Uh-uh.
I got eaten by a nettle bush once, and it'll never happen again.
No.
It was terrible.
They're like a gang.
Yeah, they are a gang of nettles. Anyway, in Appalachia, you know, we like our wilted spinach salad now, right?
I love wilted
spinach salad. Well, in Appalachia, they called it kilt lettuce.
Woo.
It was kilt. And let's see, it was made from pokeweed, dandelion, and other wild greens, drizzled with hot bacon grease that kilt the lettuce. And that's and then they would put a they called it a fat slick salad.
so it was just those greens and it was bacon
and bacon
fat.
Grease. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and then at the very end they'd splash a little bit of vinegar on top of the salad.
No,
but they didn't mix it up into the dressing actually.
So I have a question for you. Like in this day and age, you know, when you make a wilted salad,
yeah,
how do you make it? What do you put in it?
Bacon. Blue cheese.
Uh-huh. Do you have an egg in it? Do you do a hard-boiled egg?
Uh-uh.
That's kind of the Indiana version my grandmother made.
Tell me about it.
It was great. You had hard-boiled eggs that were chopped up. You had chopped up bacon. And then you had...
Oh, eggs.
Yeah. And then you usually... She either did honey or she did a little simple syrup.
Yeah.
But it wasn't... I'm sorry, not simple syrup. It was simple syrup, but in the form of vinegar and sugar.
Vinegar and sugar, yeah.
With then the bacon fat.
Yum.
And then you pour it over hot. Mm-hmm. You get it in the pan.
Right.
Get it all hot. The lettuce would be out to the side. And then you'd pop it in the bowl and then...
It was so good.
Flipping good.
Yeah, my mom did that with fresh lettuce.
Yeah.
Same way. And you'd be interested to know that back in the 30s, actually in the late 20s, the radio started being part of what it is that people do to learn about cooking. And I just thought that was really interesting. In 1930, Betty Crocker debuted as the narrator of a radio cooking show running twice a week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was there really a Betty Crocker?
No, but she had a radio show. You know, and then the U.S. Department of Agriculture started a once a week show called Housekeeper's Chat, and it was hosted by Aunt Sammy, and it was in all over the country. And Aunt Sammy was different in every region. She, she was a Southern Aunt Sammy, or an Aunt Sammy from Wyoming or whatever. So they had, I don't know, it was a 5-day a week show. It was on every day, and people called in, or I don't think they called in. They sent in questions. I don't know. But they had a lot of questions about how to feed the children and how do we keep our children safe and nutritionally well off. And they were 15-minute scripts. They were prepared in Washington, D.C., sent out to all the radio stations. And Aunt Sammy said the same thing in every session all over the country. And they had recipes and recipe books, and you know.
Yeah, I think that's something too with that we tend to forget now. Like, well, at least I shouldn't speak for everyone, but like you know, I never. It's such a you know, to use a better word, you know, it is a privilege to have food all the time, and when you do, you don't think about it. You don't think about not having.
You don't think about not having.
And you know, and there are all those stories that I'm sure many people who are listening had family members who told you what they ate during the Depression. You know, like my uncle Harold, who was you know could eat Brillo wool for breakfast. He was a tough guy. His nickname was Dutch.
Dutch.
He looked kind of like he really looked like John Wayne with less hair. And he would say, "When I was, you know, your kids are spoiled.
Oh,
you know
I
that
know.
Thing.
You're
like you're spoiled." And when in the Depression, you know, we were lucky if we got an onion sandwich. And that was his thing. And I was fascinated by that onion sandwich.
Well, the onion sandwiches are kind of good, you know, especially if you get a sweet onion.
I was going to say
a Vidalia, a little bit of butter. No, a lot of butter. Some salt and pepper and a biscuit.
With some nice Parmesan and then a layer.
And then you can garnish it with a little truffle oil.
Like the truffle oil and fig.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that food back then, even though people were short of food, had more nutritional value.
Mm-hmm. It did because the earth was better.
The earth was better and people were growing it in their own gardens.
Right.
So it wasn't mass produced.
Right.
And it wasn't deprived of its nutrient value. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I agree. One of the suggestions that came in 1930 was when you don't have enough money to, it was with regard to the kids and how to feed the children. When there's not enough money to spend for food, your diet should be built around grain products and milk, which of course, you know, that starts that whole thing. That's where the USDA came in and they started talking about the milk and then but that's a subject for another day.
Well, you know, my sister's a teacher, and she was telling me that what a lot of people who aren't in education, you know, that because there are a lot of discussions about kids going back to school and stuff. And she mm-hmm. goes, one of the components of kids going to school, at least in her district, is almost 60 to 70% of them basically get, I think, two of their meals a day
at school. Yeah. Yeah. I think that we've talked about that here before. And of course, the kids here at Vashon School District are really lucky because they get homegrown food and home cooked food. It's beautiful. One of the most popular recipes. Oh, so then after this radio thing happened, USDA decided it was time to make a cookbook, a national cookbook, an American cookbook. And so they gathered all the recipes. They got everything ready. It was all ready to go to print. And it never did go to print. Something happened. Nobody knows really what happened, but it never went to print. So, but one of the recipes that they saved from there that was one of their most popular was liver loaf.
And that was popular?
Yeah, people liked it. And I don't know if that, it doesn't say, I don't know if that was because liver was something people didn't buy. It was more available, cheap, maybe?
Yeah, and certainly nutritious.
On the cutting room floor?
Susan. Maybe. But anyway, it has 2 pounds of liver, 6 slices of bacon, and some chopped parsley, onion, milk, flaked wheat cereal biscuits, like shredded wheat.
Oh, shredded wheat.
Yeah. And 3 eggs and 1/2 cup of ketchup. So basically, it's meatloaf from liver.
That makes perfect. That
But the biscuit, you know, the wheat biscuit.
Yeah.
I guess it would work.
Yeah, because now they tell
like
you.
Like oatmeal or something.
Or they tell you use panko in a lot of meatloaf recipes now.
Right.
Oatmeal.
You know, let's tell our audience about our new game we're going to play that they have to participate in that has to do with a hat. See, we don't have a hot topic. We have a hat topic.
and we were really digging for that.
Yeah, we dug a long way for that, but we like it.
Yeah, hat topic.
And so we would like some participation from the audience. And what we'd like you to do is email us with questions. Any question. It does food related, hopefully.
Yeah. And we're really fragile, so be nice to us.
Yeah, be nice. Be kind. We're just coming out of isolation.
We are. We bruise easily.
stirringthepot@voiceofvashon.org.
Oh, you have your own email?
Yes.
Wow. When I did Tall Clover, I didn't have my own email.
Well, you have to talk to somebody about it. It's about who you know.
I'm going to get that going.
Yeah, you should. Anyway, email us with a question. And we do already have a question. We have some in the hat. Tom? Are mm-hmm. you going to draw? Okay, draw.
Yes. And with full disclosure, this was a friend of mine who I made give me a question because we hadn't put the call out yet. And so I said, you need to give me, she was visiting from Seattle, my friend Joan. Hi, Joan.
Hi, Joan.
And she came all the way over from, and she was really good, everyone. She didn't cough on anyone and she wore a mask. Okay, there. Phew. So... That's right. And her question was, we were talking about food memories, and she goes, what are one or two of your most memorable meals? And not necessarily, you know, like what was the best food you ever ate or any of that, mm-hmm. but what was a meal that like something happened that it just, you never will forget it?
Is that the question?
Yeah, that's a question.
Is that to me?
That is to you and even to...
And to you.
And to
or
me.
Maybe to Susan too.
Susan, I would love to, yeah.
Well... Yeah, there's a hands down.
Uh-huh.
June 1986.
So you were...
I don't know.
Old. I mean, not old.
I wasn't old.
No, that's youngish.
Not yet. Anyway, it was my first trip to Europe. I hadn't ever been before. And so we were in Geneva, Switzerland, at Pearl du Lac.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lovely table by the lake, and... Within, I don't know, it looked like it was close enough to touch, was Mont Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just getting ready to be dark. And the moon was coming over the mountains. And the moon was sort of setting behind Mont Blanc. And the moon was the color of beautiful yellow cheddar cheese. It was just gorgeous. So, you know, there were the waiters and their white coats and it was beautiful. And the food, I still have the wine label. It was some fancy Vouvray we had. And salmon. I remember I had salmon. But more, well, the food was part of it. But more than that was the whole ambient sort of, oh my God, look where we are. uh-huh. and everyone was speaking French and there was music and I was over the moon and I was so touched by all of it. I was being highly, I don't know if I can tell this on the radio. Oh, I think I can. I was being, you know, really affectionate with my husband. I really enjoyed our company. And we were with two other people. We were with his mother and her friend.
Now it gets weird.
Who met us. No, they met us in Geneva.
Oh, okay.
Okay, they met us there. And we spent 3 or 4 days in Geneva, and then we went our own way, and mm-hmm. they went their way. Anyway, his mother was a comedian of some note, and she had one of those kind of smoky voices, you know, where those women just smoking
like
their cigarettes.
Like Sophie Tucker.
Yeah, like Sophie Tucker.
So, Soph.
She said, so, here are these lovers over here. She said, Phyllis, this is making me sick. She said, these two are just going to have so much fun when they go back to their room and all we have is a bidet. okay, that has nothing to do with food. And now, am I going to get fired?
No, that's pretty funny.
Will I get fired?
No, that's a good story.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So that's my favorite meal, but the conversation happened after the meal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
What about you?
Oh, gosh. I think I was trying to, I think because, you know, I grew up in a time when families had dinner every night, you know, so there's sort of that general fond memory of that mm-hmm. ritual each mm-hmm. night. But the first, I would say, I want to use an example that where I realized what food could be. Like I had... And so I grew up with an Air Force dad, and we'd go to the officers' club, and they'd have, like, you know, I thought the ultimate was pickled crab apples. And,
mm-hmm. and yeah, the little relish tray.
Little relish tray and a giant fish made out of tuna or salmon.
Yum.
That had, like, cucumber scales.
The mold.
Yes, and the mold. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I thought that was the ultimate in cuisine. And I was a lucky boy to be able to, even at that age, you know, for second grade. Well, when I was in eighth grade... We were living in Pennsylvania, and my eighth grade class, we were going to New York City.
Yow.
For the very first time.
Eighth grade.
I even had to get like flare pants because that's what was in style. Mm-hmm. I had to get an outfit.
To wear to New York.
To New York, because I was going to New York. I look like a schlub, you know? So, what's so funny is New York when was that? God, it was when it was sort of like going down the tubes.
Mm.
And of course, they book our eighth grade school field trip with only like one...
Chaperone.
Only one chaperone. In basically, in Times Square, when it was sort of like... It was
a little sketchy.
It was CD Central. It really was. And it was like I was in the bar scene at Star Wars. I was so fascinated by mm-hmm. who are these people and why are those women have so much makeup on?
Yeah.
And, you know, that sort of thing.
And such short skirts.
Such short skirts. Why are they asking me, what? So I was with some of my friends and we wanted to go out to a really nice restaurant mm-hmm. because, you know, eighth graders have such a huge allowance income.
Disposable income.
Disposable income. So we ended up, we were walking around. Of course, we were just idiots and, you know, mm-hmm. we're bouncing around, looking around. We there we go. And we had no idea. And so there's this little like Japanese restaurant off this little side street. And I said, well, why don't we go there,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone was like, I don't know, you know, so it took like 20 minutes for us to like get the courage to go in. So what was so great is we went in this little Japanese restaurant and it was dark. It was so dark. But the women were in kimono it was weird. It was sort of like 50s traditional in a way. It was like traditional mm-hmm. Japanese within a side serving of 50s decor. It was odd, but it was really a sweet, warm, and cozy place. And what was so memorable is number one, we couldn't believe how much it cost. but what was so great, it was like the first time in eighth grade, the owners were, as it must have been a family, or they were so lovely and treated us so well. And we just, no one had ever treated me as an eighth grader like this. And they brought all these little dishes that we had no idea what we were eating and stuff. And then at the end, they brought us a complimentary drink, which is hysterical. We're in eighth grade.
Well, they didn't know.
They didn't know. And they were, and really English wasn't really the first language there.
Wow.
And they were just so wonderful that it was one of those meals and evenings that transported me
mm-hmm.
About a food and people and place can be something so different. And
and just so friendly.
It was they were remarkably generous with what idiots we were, because we're like, you know, we're eighth graders.
Well, what would you be with all those weird names and the, you know, it's wonderful food, but if you've never seen it before.
Exactly. What's this? You know? What's Yaga Gaba? What?
Yeah.
You know, what's that?
Yeah. Susan, have you a favorite or interesting?
I have a memory from my childhood in the Chicago suburbs.
Right on.
Where my mother had grown up on a farm in North Dakota through the Depression. Everything she ate, they grew. It was all fresh. And so she, when she became a young housewife, thought everything that was canned or frozen was really cool.
Oh.
So I didn't even know that asparagus came in anything but a can until I went to my sophisticated friend's house down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And we were having dinner with her and her family. And they had these vegetables that looked like flowers. And I'm watching them, and they had melted butter, and they would take a petal off the flower and dip it in the butter. And I thought, well, this is really interesting. And I tried it, and I was thrilled. I was stunned.
You loved
it. I had discovered artichokes.
Oh, wow.
And I've loved them ever since, and I have since learned that asparagus can come fresh.
It can, and when it's in a can, it's a kind of slime you didn't even know existed.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but that's what I grew up on, was canned asparagus. We didn't have it very often, but yeah, it's not very good.
No.
No.
Can I tell you my artichoke story?
Yes, please.
So when I was in college and I was interning at this law firm for thinking I wanted to be a lawyer, that's a whole nother story.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it was like really kind of like a really cool TV show. Like all the lawyers were young and fabulous, and they, and I used to be the butt of most of their jokes because I was a college student and they were, you know, they were working there. And so apparently, and they never missed anything. So apparently I had at one point when we were out at some restaurant, said I'd never had artichokes or something. And so then when I was going back to school and they were taking me out to lunch, they said, hey, we took the liberty of ordering you an artichoke. And I said,
okay.
Because you said you had never had one. I said, oh, awesome. But nobody else ordered one.
Oh.
I was the only one
that got
it.
So you didn't know what to do.
I'd never eaten an artichoke. No, I had no idea. So they're sitting there, and I'm with wills of steel. They sat there and watched me eat the leaf, the whole leaf. I said, you just dip it in the mayo or the
butter,
the butter. So I did, and then I start chewing it. I'm going like, and it's just so awful and scratching my throat. And I'm going, I don't think they cooked it enough. It's really tough. And then of course they let me know that I was not eating it correctly after I had choked down.
Well, how embarrassing and how rude.
It was pretty, yeah.
Kids are mean. Speaking of asparagus, and I'm trying to think of where I saw this, and I know you probably saw it too, but there was something went around, maybe it was a newspaper, but it was an article about asparagus, and it was how it's a weed, really. You know, I mean, it just grows everywhere.
Oh, that was from...
where was that
it
from?
It was from Linda, our friend Linda Weiss.
Yes, it was. That's
and
where it was.
It was
Hi,
an
Linda.
Article from this really great, it's called Post Alley.
Post Alley,
and they have really good writers.
Yeah. Post Alley, yeah. So they were talking in there about how asparagus is weed, and you can cultivate it anywhere you want to, and, you know, kids have an aversion to asparagus, and one time a little boy went to his friend's house for dinner, and they had asparagus, and the little boy said, oh, I don't eat vegetables. And the other little boy said, well, these aren't vegetables, these are weeds. And he ate them.
So how come it's so expensive?
Well, because we're not buying wild asparagus that grew in our backyard, you know.
Yeah, even over in Yakima, when you go over to Yakima in the spring, it's just all over the place.
I used to have it in my backyard. It just grew.
Yeah. I think it's a scam.
Maybe it is. Everything's a scam.
I think that's one of the benefits of living in Washington State. There are
it is
there
one,
are many yeah. with our food. And asparagus and Rainier cherries are definitely. Apples, of course. I mean, God, we have such good
we
food
We have
here.
Everything.
We
have
really do.
Everything. And the fish.
And the fish.
Don't forget the fish.
I know. Are you the one telling me about tuna?
Yeah.
Like the best tuna, the cleanest tuna, the non-mercury tuna.
Is Northwest grown.
Northwest.
I was talking with the scientist at the University of Oregon.
Mm-hmm. U of O.
No, the other one.
O of U.
whatever. I can't think right now. But anyway, I was writing an article about fish and mercury and poison mm-hmm. and the waters. And he was saying that...
Which people don't talk about that much anymore. No, it used to be a huge deal.
It used to be a big deal. But I think we've kind of gotten our, you know, safe fishing, our good fish we can eat, and the ones we ban.
Well,
and
that was last year.
Was that just last
no,
year?
No, I mean, things are changing.
Oh, yeah, they are. That's true. Anyway, he said from all the studies that he's done, the Northwest waters from about the south tip of Oregon to Alaska have very little, if any, mercury. At the time I talked to him, it was like 10 years ago or so, and he said there was none. I don't know if that's true
today. Well,
that's today.
Great.
Because in the south waters, you know, like in Indonesia, Vietnam, around in there, when they raise these fish are giant. They live in those warm waters, and they swim around there for years, and they just absorb all the ick that's in that water down there. But our water in the Pacific Northwest is fairly clean. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we can't say it's clean, but we can say it's fairly clean. It's cleaner than it is in Indonesia, that's mm-hmm. for sure. And the fish are cleaner and they're better and they're smaller. Mm-hmm. They're healthier. So I don't buy commercial tuna anymore.
Yeah.
Unless it's Northwest harvested, wild harvest. And no. It's really expensive. So a tuna sandwich is not, you know... cheap anymore.
No, in fact, I was at a local store here, and there I was looking at when I lived in Alaska when I was out of college. You could I used to love to go to this little place in Juneau called City Cafe mm-hmm. because the specialty, it was always on the menu, especially during season, which at that time was long. They were halibut cheeks.
Oh,
and you know, so it's,
yum.
They were crazy good.
Ugh.
And I just saw them the other day and they were $29.99.
Yeah, they're $30 a pound.
Yeah, and they were kind of the not necessarily a throwaway, but they certainly weren't.
They weren't halibut.
They were cheaper
cheeks.
than just the halibut. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's very disappointing. But,
yeah. But you know what's good though? Is if you really wanted to splurge, it makes scallops seem cheap at $19 a pound.
That's true. Well, you know, what are we going to talk about next?
Well, I know what I was going to ask you because I just bought some from Green Man Farm, some rhubarb.
Mm.
And I was going to say, what do you do with you when you get, I usually make a rhubarb pie.
Sure.
And there are lots of camps with rhubarb pie. Like there's the rhubarb pie camp, nothing else. There's mm-hmm. a rhubarb custard mm-hmm. camp. And then mm-hmm. there's a strawberry rhubarb mm-hmm. and no custard or custard mm-hmm. camp. Do you, and then there's other things you can do with rhubarb.
Oh, I love rhubarb. It's one of my favorite things. And I'm a purist when it comes to rhubarb pie. I don't want any strawberries in it. I don't want anything in it except for one. And that is bluebarb. And that's blueberries and rhubarb.
Yeah. So are you using equal parts of each? Like
you know, I just do it by eye. Uh-huh. You know, you just chop up your rhubarb as much as you would use in your pie or maybe a tiny bit less.
Oh, I'm going to make this.
And then just add in a bunch of blueberries, however many you think. I'm sure I use at least a couple cups.
Okay.
In a pie, maybe mm-hmm. maybe one. I don't somewhere in there.
I've never had that.
And then the other thing I really, really, really love is rhubarb jam on a biscuit. There's just nothing like it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's so good.
Okay, I'm gonna make that too.
Yeah. So I'll come and help you.
It just rhubarb
it's
and
just
sugar and lemon
and
juice
and yeah, you don't need pectin. I mean, you just do it the way that you normally make jam. Yeah.
Cool.
And there's some. There's another rhubarb ginger. Rhubarb ginger is very good.
Mm.
Jam. Oh. And so we're getting down to sort of the end of... It's already up.
Is it time to go?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd just like to thank everybody for listening, and I hope that you'll send us some questions.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
StirringThePot@voiceofvashon.org. Send us some questions, and we'll answer them. We'll draw them out of a hat. We're going to have a different hat every time, because Tom is the king of hats.
Woo-woo.
And he's going to bring
I will bring my beret.
He's got fancy hats.
Yes.
So, thank you so much for listening, Tom. Thank you for coming and being here.
Thanks for including me.
I'm just real glad you're here too, Susan. Thanks for the sound effects. It was fun. Bye-bye, everybody. Hope you come back next week. Bye-bye. Oh, next month.
Bye. Next month. Bye.